Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Here, the Gemara is continuing to discuss the Mishnah with regards to the Midah Keneged Midah with Yosef. Yosef took care of his father's burial. Therefore, he was zoche that Moshe took care of his burial. And since Moshe took care of Yosef, he was zoche that Kodesh Baruch Hu took care of Moshe's burial. Mishna Mikari Dichtiv. Why in the beginning, when they're taking Yaakov up for burial to Eretz Canaan, says there, Vayel Yosef, Likborat Aviv, Ve'alo ito kol ovdei paro, v'adar v'chol beit Yosef, ve'echav u'beit aviv. Why in the beginning, in the order of the individuals who are accompanying Yaakov up to Eretz Canaan, it first mentions the abdei paro, and afterwards mentions the brothers, the family of Yosef. U'besof, on the return, it says, ve'yashav Yosef mitzrayma hu ve'echav, v'adar v'chol olim ito l'gborat aviv. On the way back, it mentions Yosef, then his family, and only afterwards, all the others that accompanied them. So it seems to be a change between the time that they went up to Eretz Canaan versus the time that they returned from Eretz Canaan. In one case, the brothers are pushed to the back, and on the way back, they're at the forefront. What changed there? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. B'tchila ad shelo ra'u b'chvodan shel Yisrael. In the beginning, when they had yet to see how much kavod or tribute everyone paid to Yaakov Avinu, lo nagu behen kavod. So then the brothers were just another party coming along. They weren't so special. In the end, when they saw how much honor was granted to Yaakov Avinu, nagu behen kavod, then they gave the brothers, the children of Yaakov, they put them up in the front. The Abdei Paro were then noe kavod with the brothers of Yosef because they saw how important Yaakov was. Dichtiv. How do we know that's the case? Because it says, ve'yavou ad gorin hatad. That they came until the Goren, which is a threshing floor. Atad is a type of thorn bush. V'chi Goren yeshul atad. What's the association between a threshing floor and the thorns? That's not what you thresh on the threshing floor, obviously. So Amar Rabbi Abba Lameid shikifua kitarim larono shel Yaakov kigoren zesh mekifin lo atad. So that it is a mashal, or it's describing something. So just like by the Goren, by the threshing floor, in order to protect the threshing floor, they used to put barbed wire around it. Obviously, they didn't have barbed wires. What they used to do is they put atad. They used to put the thorn bushes around it in order to stop the animals and others from entering into that area. So they put up thorn bushes around it. So too, by the Aron of Yaakov, when they brought it up from Mitzrayim, all the kings hung their crowns around the Aron of Yaakov. And the crowns, you know, have these pointy tops to them. So it looked like it was surrounded by these thorn bushes. Shebo, because at that time, Bo Sham Bnei Esav, Ubnei Ishmael, Ubnei Keturah. So all the different parties came to pay tribute to Yaakov. Tana, Kulam the Milchamabo. Well, that was not exactly what they were coming for. They were coming to wage war against them, right? To start up with them. What are you doing here? Why are you coming back here? It looked like they were coming to conquer. Kevin Shra'u Kitroshel Yosef Talui Baranoshel Yaakov. Once they saw the crown of Yosef hanging on their own of Yaakov, then they all took their crowns off and hung it around. The crown of Yosef is a crown of Mitzrayim. So they see the crown of Mitzrayim, they realize, wow, this is somebody chashuv from Mitzrayim. So they all then paid tribute in that manner. Tana, 36 k'tarim natlu barono shel Yaakov. There were 36 crowns that were hung then around the Aron of Yaakov. It's interesting. First of all, it says here that it was because of the kavod of Yaakov that the other parties hung up their crowns. And therefore, on the way back, the Abdei Paro, or the Mitzrim, give kavod to the brothers of Yosef. But in truth, here what ends up happening is the reason they pay tribute is because they see the crown of Yosef. And the crown of Yosef is because he is the ruler of Mitzrayim. So it's really the crown of Yosef as ruler of Mitzrayim, which generates their placing, gives the impetus for them to place their crowns around. So it's really the Mitzrayim that does it, not really Kavod Yaakov. But the way the Midrash is reading this is even though the impetus came from the crown of Yosef, nevertheless, they were paying tribute to Yaakov and their relationship to Yaakov. And so because of that, the Abdei Paro saw that as being something that was unique about Yaakov, and that's why, on the way back, they give honor to his children and let them go first. Now, as far as the 36 crowns that are put up here, Rashi has an enumeration where he says, Yudbet Nisi'im di Ishmael, this week's parsha that we just read, the closing part of Chayesara, lists the 12 Nisi'im from Ishmael. And then in Parshat Vayishlach, at the end of Parshat Vayishlach, there it says, V'chav gimel alufim nimnu be'esav. Alufi Esav, aluf toman, aluf tomar. There in the end of Parshat Vayishlach, it goes through all these alufim, these leaders, or these tribal leaders. And Rashi claims over there, there are 23 tribal leaders over there. It's not exactly true. Rashi himself notes that really there are 25 and not 23. He says that Teman and Kenaz are mentioned twice. Since they're mentioned twice, you only count them once, so that's 23. But he says, wait a minute, but also Korach there is mentioned twice. But he says, no, Korach was two different people, because there was a Korach that was part of the family of Eliphaz, and then there's another Korach who's from the family of Alivama. So because of that, there are 23 B'nai Esav, that are Alufim of Esav. When you put those together, you get your 35. And then the Kitrosh Yosef makes it 36. That's where Rashi comes up with the enumeration. The difficulty with Rashi's explanation, aside from the fact that he has to play around with the Alufei Esav, the difficulty is that the Gemara here says, Shubo, Sham, B'nai Esav, B'nai Ishmael, U'B'nai Keturah. B'nai Keturah are not mentioned according to the counting of Rashi. Where are the B'nai Keturah that are enumerated over here? And interestingly enough, the B'nai Keturah, according to the Rambam, have a unique status. The Rambam writes, with regards to Brit Milah, that B'nai Keturah, because they were children of Abraham, it's the end of this week's parsha of Chayesara, that because they were children of Abraham, they had the Mesorah of Milah, and that they still do Brit Milah based on the fact, or Chayavim in Brit Milah, because they were children of Abraham. It's interesting, Rambam. So here, if you look in the Tosfot Shans, he comes up with a different count. The Loka Perisha Kuntris, as he says, not like Rashi. And he says that there were 12 from Ishmael, 14 Alufei B'nai Esav that are in Vayishlach, and then B'nai Keturah, there are another 10. 6 that are children of Abraham, but then from those children of Abraham, they subdivide. There are a couple of them that have children that are subdivided. Therefore, you come up with a total of 10 of B'nai Keturah, because Abraham has 6 additional children through Keturah, plus their grandchildren who take over their parents' positions. Then you have 10 from B'nai Keturah. So according to the Tosfot Shans, you have 10 from B'nai Keturah, you have 12 from Ishmael, and you have 14 from Alufei Esav. That gets you to the 36 number. And here he does not count the crown of Yosef in that number, because he gets to 36 without having the crown of Yosef in there. And then afterwards he brings the interpretation of Yosef. So there are different ways to figure out how they got to this 36 count in terms of the crowns that were put onto the Aron of Yaakov. Advice Bedusha Mispeit Gadol Bekaved Maod. Tana Afilu Susim Vafilu Chamorim. It was such a great mourning eulogy that it even included the horses and the donkeys. What does that mean, that the horses and the donkeys were included? So either it could be euphemistic. The horses and donkeys are not animals, but rather referring to people. But even the lowliest of people joined in the Avelut and the mourning that was associated with Yaakov. Others suggest that the Susim and Chamorim, they were braying and neighing, just like the people were crying and calling out in the Hespei, the animals themselves were also causing this noise to happen, and so it was as if they were joining in the mispeit for Yaakov. And others say that it was intentionally precipitated by the people that joined there, that whenever they went to such an event, either they dressed the animals up in black, or they used to starve the animals. They used to also not feed them, as if they were fasting, quote-unquote, over the mate. But also in that hunger, they would neigh and they'd bray, so it would raise the noise level that was associated with the mispeid, with the eulogy. And we know that from the Gemarot in Moed Katan and in the Tanit, the Me'onot, the way that they used to cry and call out, and the eulogizing of individuals involved a lot of this sound effects that were involved with this, with the women crying, and they had professional criers or women who led the crying of the women. And so all of that, the noise effects were a part of the eulogizing, a part of the procedures, like almost musical accompaniment, mood music, that helped to bring people into the mood. So then when the Susim and the Chamorim were also making their braying and neighing, that also helped in terms of the Hespeit. So that might be part of it. Kevin Shigula Marata Machpela, Ata Esev Kamakev. So they got to Maratza Mechpelah, they're to bury Yaakov in Hebron. Right here, they in Goren Atad, which is in Eber Yardain, and then they continue onwards to Hebron to bury him in Maratza Mechpelah. Esav says, "What are you doing? That's my place there. What are you putting Yaakov in there for?" Amalem Mamrei Kiryat Ha'arba Hi Hebron. So we have the name of the city is Kiryat Arba. It is Hebron. So which one is it, Kiryat Arba or Hebron? So we know that the Midrashim, Rabbi Yitzchak, Kiryat Arba, Arba Zugotayu. The reason it's called Kiryat Arba is because there are four pairs that are buried there. Adam v'Chava, Avram v'Sara, Yitzchak v'Rivka, Yaakov v'Leya. So since there are four couples that are buried there, it's called Kiryat Arba. The truth is that the Midrash brings two impossible interpretations of Kiryat Arba. One of them is this, that there are four Zugot that are buried there. The other one is that there were the four Anakim, the great giants, that came from there. And then Kiryat Arba was the father of the giants that lived there. But maybe over here, the Gemara specifically picks the interpretation that refers to the Arba Zugot, because here it says Kiryat Ha'arba, which is the Hei Yediyah, the four, the known four. And then maybe because of that, it references here only that Midrash that talks about the Arba Zugot. But we know that there are four pairs that are buried there. Iu Kavrada Leya, so Esav's claim is, listen, there are two spots left here. Yaakov used one of those spots for Leya. Bididei, Vahai, Devaish, Didihu. So he put Leya in his spot. The one that's left over is mine. You know, we are brothers. We're going to split this chaluka here. I get one burial spot. He gets one burial spot. He used his up with Leya. The other one left is mine. Amalei, Zavinta. Said, you sold it to Yaakov. Amalei, Nehid, Zvine, Bichiruta, Pshituta, Mizvine. He says, I sold my Bechor. That's coming up in this week's Parsha. That Esav sells the Bechorah to Yaakov. But that's fine as far as his double portion. But when he sells the Bechorah, he's still left with his normal portion. He said, Pashut is, a Bechor is the eldest, the Pashut is a regular inheritor. So I'm now a regular inheritor. A regular inheritor, we're going to split this. He gets his piece, I get my piece. I still have a claim here. I may not be the Bechor, but I still have a claim. I'm relaying in Dichtiv, because it says in Parshat Vayechi, when Yaakov is describing where to bury him, he says, Bikivri asher kariti li. I want you to bury me in the plot that I... Now the word kiriti really means to dig out. So it means here, I want you to bury me in the plot which I dug. Now, it's clear that Yaakov did not dig Maratha Machpelah. He didn't do anything with Maratha Machpelah. It was already done from the time of Abraham. Yitzchak already used it. Yaakov didn't do any digging in Maratha Machpelah. So what does it mean, Asher Kariti Li, that I dug out for myself there? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bayin Yotzeudak, En Kira Lashon Mechira. Kira doesn't here mean to dig or excavate. It means to sell or purchase. It's a transaction. Shekein b'krachei, Yam Korin l'mechira, Kira. That in the far-flung islands, on the islands of the sea, the cities of the sea, they use the word Kira in place of Mechira. So Kira means a transaction. So when Yaakov says, that's the kever that I purchased. So not that I dug out or excavated, but rather the one that I purchased. So Amalehu, Havalu Yigrata, bring me the document of sale. I want to see it. Amalehu Yigrata Barad de Mitzrayim. We live in Mitzrayim, the documents we stored with our stuff down in Mitzrayim. Uman, Nezel. So who are we going to send to go get it? Nezel, Naphtali, the Khalil. We'll send Naphtali because he's light-footed. He is very fast. Kiyauta, similar to the gazelle. So the Chtiv Naphtali, Ayala Shlucha, Anotein Imre Shefer, and the Birkat Yaakov. Says Naphtali is like the quick or the running hind. Anotein Imre Shefer, that gives the good word. That gives the good word, Imre Sefer, that he brings the good book, meaning that he's going to bring the documentation from Mitzrayim back. So in the meantime, Chushim Bray de Dan, Chushim the son of Dan, Taman, Havo, he was present while this was all going on, V'yakirin le'udne, and he was hard of hearing. Amaluhu Maihai, what's going on? What's all this altercation? What's all the conversation that's going on? Ramulei kam akev hai adat Naphtali me'arad Mitzrayim. Esav's holding up the show until Naphtali gets back from Mitzrayim and brings us the documentation. Amalu v'adati Naphtali me'arad Mitzrayim. Hey, avi abba mutal b'bizayon. So what's supposed to happen here? In the meantime, while we're waiting for Naphtali to come back, my grandfather is supposed to be sitting here in state and just waiting and not being buried. And this is totally inappropriate. Shakal kufa. He took a staff, machia reshe, he whacked Esav in the head, natra in the ene, his eyes popped out, v'naflu akara de Yaakov. And they fell, whether kara here means on the feet of Yaakov, or kara means on the bed of Yaakov, but they fell onto him. Patchino Yaakov de ene, Yaakov opened up his eyes, v'achich, and he smiled. V'ainu dechtiv, ismach tzadik, the tzadik will rejoice, ki chaza nakam pe'amav. When he sees the revenge of his feet or his footsteps, irchatz b'dama rasha, he will bathe in the blood of the rasha. Meaning that he's celebrating the fact that those that tried to stop him, gave him a hard time, or were rishayim, that Hashem acts to take revenge on them, and he will celebrate or be able to rejoice in the fact that Hashem has taken revenge for him. And a number of interesting things to say about this, which are, in the Sichut Musar, Rav Chaim Shlomo Levitz, on different points here, brings down in his Sichut Musar things to learn out from this. One of them, he writes it twice with regards to Bnei Dan, Chushim. The idea that Chushim steps up here and then hits Esav or whacks him with the staff, while everybody else was just fine. He said, what happened that the son of Dan, who, again, they're talking about here, probably the lowliest. We're talking about Dan, who's the back of the, you know, in terms of the machanot, he's Masefa Machanot, he's the one of the youngest of the Bnei Shpachot, and now it's his son who's hard of hearing. Why is he the only one who steps up and does something about it? Meantime, everybody else was okay with it. So Shmuel Levitz points out here, and I think, now that I notice that it's also a Maral that says a similar thing about the interpretation here, he calls it Midat HaHistaglut. That's what he calls it. The ability for a person to become accustomed or inured to certain things that are happening around them. That when things happen, la'at la'at, when they happen in a slow pace, people become accustomed and then it becomes the norm. And we see this many times, the examples that he brings, one of them is the Akedat Yitzchak. The difference between Abram's reaction to Akedat Yitzchak and Sarah's reaction to Akedat Yitzchak. For both of them, it was shocking and something that should have been unbearable. Yet for Abraham, Hashem stated to speak to Abraham. He says, Kachna bincha, et yichidicha, asher hafta. And slowly, he gets Avram into the idea. And by doing it slowly, Avram's able to, first of all, rise to the occasion and do it. And then Sarah, who finds out about the information, just all of a sudden, he's up on the Mizbeach and they're about to kill him. She dies from the news, right, based on the Midrash. So there's a difference between being accustomed or slowly growing into something versus the suddenness. And because of that, it works both the Tovah and the Ra'ah. It works the tovah, which is that people can slowly grow. If they take small steps, they're able to grow, because it's not this huge step which looks unachievable or something beyond their grasp, because if you accustom yourself slowly, then everything becomes a manageable little step. And the same way on the negative side, which is that the Yetzer Hara works that way as well, which is that people become accustomed. Okay, this is inappropriate, but it's only a small infraction, so we'll let that go. But once you get accustomed to that small infraction, that's only takes you to the next step, and then it builds and builds and builds, so that the point where a person has done something or become accustomed to something that they would never have done, had you told them up front, this is where they're going to end up, they would never end up over there. So he says that's the same thing that's happening over here. The reason that Chushin, the son of Dan, reacts the way he does is because he's not a party to all of the conversation or the negotiation that's going on. He's just there at the end. And then in the end, he asks them, what happened? They tell him, well, Naftali's going to get the document. He goes, what are you talking about? My grandfather's going to lay in state here for another 5 days while Naftali gets the document? It's unacceptable. And the shock and the disbelief about what's happening here causes him to go and hit Esav. Versus the other parties who were greater than him and maybe even older than him, why were they okay with it? Because they were involved in the negotiation. So slowly it goes back and forth, until it became acceptable that Yaakov's going to lay in state while they go get the document. So it's a key musar to take from this about how we as human beings work. The ability, both from the good and bad side, to become accustomed to anything. Even though, again, had you been told up front about this, you would have been unacceptable. You would not have said okay about it. By the way, the Tosfot Shans here brings an alternate midrash that actually Yehuda killed Esav and not Chushin ben Dan. So he suggests the Tosfot Shans that they did it together, or that they were both joint parties to this, and that's how he died, or that Chushim hit him, and then Yehuda finished him off, whatever it is, in order to incorporate both of these Midrashim. The other thing that he points out here is that, what's this idea that Yaakov opened up his eyes and smiled, as if he was enjoying the nekama that was taken here? So Rav Chaim Shalevitz over there also says that that's not the nature of the tzaddik, to rejoice in the downfall of Rishayim, or to take, right, b'nfol yivecha al tismach, or lo tikom lo titor. These are things that are not appropriate for the tzaddik. So he differentiates there between nekama, which is a personal nekama, versus nekama, which is mekadesh shem shamayim. That when it's Hashem's nekama, when Hashem stands up and says that this is not the case or this is inappropriate, so the tzaddikim rejoice in the nekama of Hashem, when Hashem's name is made whole, or the revenge that's taken justifies or makes the kiddush Hashem because the rishayim are punished. And then the celebration is not a celebration of their personal nekama revenge that's taken here. Rather, the celebration is a celebration of the fact that Hashem's word has come true, or that Hashem's word is being upheld. And so there's a difference between celebrating in the nekama of Hashem versus in celebrating in a personal nekama. And therefore he notes over here that this nekama that's taken over here is not a nekama of a personal nekama for Yaakov, but rather that he sees the words of Hashem coming true, that the Rishayim will be punished, and that the tzaddikim will be rewarded. And he sees that as being carried out over here when Hekushim ben Dan knocks Esav out, or if he knocked him out, Yehuda finished him off, to include the Midrashim that said that his head rolled into the Marat HaMachpelah. But because of that, he was happy about this incident. Now, when did Yaakov purchase the Marat HaMachpelah? That's not mentioned anywhere. We know that he bought the Bechorah. Where did he buy the Marat HaMachpelah? So that's a Midrash that's brought in the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach. When Yaakov returns from the house of Lavan and meets Esav when he comes into Eretz Yisrael, he didn't want to keep any of the money that he had made in Chutz Laretz that he made by Lavan. So then he puts up a huge pile of the money in front of Esav and says, here, take all of this, and I want you to take this in exchange for the Marat HaMachpelah. And so you choose, Esav, you want my money, or do you want the shtar of Marat HaMachpelah? And Esav chooses the money, and the shtar Marat HaMachpelah then went to Yaakov. That's the Midrash tells us when Yaakov purchased the Marat HaMachpelah from Esav. Both Yaakov and Esav were equal brothers here, and they were inheriting Yitzchak. So they each were entitled to one spot in the Marat HaMachpelah. So Yaakov bought Esav's spot in Marat HaMachpelah. At that moment, the Nivuah, which is the Gemara calls, we saw this before with regards to Bat Paro and others, that Nibim v'lo yadu mash Nibim. They're having Nivuah, but they don't really know what they're saying. So over here, Rivka says, Zechliv, Lama ishkol gam shnechem yom echad. But she's advising in next week's Parsha, Yaakov to run away to her brother Lavan and not to stay around. She doesn't want to lose both of you on one day. Why should I lose both of you on one day? Which is that Yitzchak is going to pass away. And when Yitzchak passes away, Esav's going to kill Yaakov. So why should I lose both of you on one day? Or if Yaakov fights back, then Esav, they're going to lose both brothers in one day. Even though they didn't die in one day, their burial ended up being on one day. So that's interesting. Her comment is about Yitzchak and Yaakov. But nevertheless, here it came true in another manifestation, which is both of her sons were buried on the same day. Now the Gemara asks an interesting question, which is, V'ilo asak be Yosef echav lo yum aske be? Had Yosef not taken care of his father's burial, his father's bones, would the brothers not have stepped up and dealt with it? Why is Yosef given all the credit rather than the brothers? Faktiv, v'yisu otav banav, Eretz Kanan. That his children carried him into Eretz Kanan. Which is an interesting part of the story there, which is they go to Goren Atad, which is in Chutz Laretz, which is in our both Moab and Eretz Yarden, and then it seems that the brothers carry on into Eretz Canaan, but the people from Mitzrayim and the others do not carry on and go there. So the brothers carry him to Eretz Canaan. Amru, inichu lo kvodo b'malachim yoter mibehejotot. The brothers stood back, not because they didn't want to be involved, not because they would not have been partners there, but rather they realized that if Yosef does it, it's much more kavod to Yaakov if Yosef, who's a king, deals or carries the aron of Yaakov versus if they carry the aron of Yaakov. So they demurred in this case and gave Yosef the ability to do it because they saw in their stepping back more kavod to their father. So yes, they would have done it, but they realized that there was a benefit in Yosef doing it. And so Yosef is rewarded for the fact that even though he was a king, he stepped up and he did it, and he took care of his father's bones, which again provided more kavod for Yaakov. So then the Gemara continues, Milano gadol mi Yosef, who was greater than Yosef, that Moshe Rabbeinu took care of him as a reward for the fact that Yosef took care of Yaakov. Tarabanan, bore kama kavivot mitzvot o Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's see how precious mitzvot are to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shekol Yisrael kulam nitasku bebizah. One, they're going to leave Mitzrayim, and basically the Mitzrayim are giving away gifts to the Jews wholesale, just to get them out of there. So everybody else is running around collecting all the gold, the silver, and all the other gifts. Vayishalu ish me'ayit echarvata. But the word is vayishal, which is to lend. But if you look there, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch says that the word vayishal or she'la is 90% of the time, or 95% of the time in Tanakh, is used to mean to give a gift, and not to borrow. There's one time that it means to borrow, which is in Parshat Mishpatim, when they talk about the Shoel. That's the exception to the rule. So he says that the Vayishal over here is not a Sheila borrowing, but rather Sheila in terms of Matana, that they were gifted it. So here, they're getting all this stuff, they're getting all the Bizat Mitzrayim, and then Moshe is Nitasek B'mitzvot. Moshe instead of collecting all the money, is busy doing a mitzvah. Shneamar, Chacham Leiv Yikach Mitzvot. The one who is a wise in the heart will go ahead and collect mitzvot, or you'll buy mitzvot. Minayin avi yodeya, Moshe Rabbeinu eichan Yosef kavur. So what they're referring to is the fact that Moshe went and got Atzmot Yosef to take him out of Mitzrayim. So Moshe's busy trying to get the Aron of Yosef, while everybody else is busy collecting their money and their gold and silver. So how did he know where to find the kever of Yosef? So Amru, Serach bat Asher nishtayra mioto ador. Serach bat Asher was still alive. She was blessed with a long life. The Midrash says that she is the one that broke the news to Yaakov that Yosef was still alive. She was able to play music and sing to him and tell him this without, again, similar to what Rav Shmulevitz says before, to slowly bring him into it rather than pitom, and it'd be a sudden thing that would have scared him off. So she was zocha to a long life, and she was still around here at the Yetziat Mitzrayim. She's mentioned in the enumeration at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, in the counting there.
Right.
So we know at the time, at the end of the sojourn in the Midbar, she's still alive because she's mentioned in that enumeration. All right, so Alach Moshe Etzla. Moshe goes to her to get some advice. Amar la, klo mi'at yodat eichan Yosef kavur. Do you know where Yosef is buried? Amar lo, aron shel mechtechet asulo Mitzrayim. They made him this iron or metal sarcophagus. Ve'kavua benilo senar. And they dumped him into the Nile River. Kedeshit barchu me'mav. That would be a bracha for the Nile, because that Yosef was the one who brought them the sova and all that was good. And so now they want to keep that bracha coming. And the Nile to them represented the bracha of Mitzrayim, because that's how they got all their irrigation through the Nile. They don't get rain there. They do it through the irrigation through the Nile River. That's the fertile plain. So they put them in there to be a part of their bracha. And that's why the Midrashim talk about how they worship the Nile. And how the Nile was considered to be a god because it was really their source of plantain or their sustenance. So now Tosfot over here asks, why does he go to Serach Bat Asher when there were descendants of Yosef that were still alive? Because we know again at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, as well as in Sefer Dvarim, we have as part of the conquest of Eivrei Yarden, we know that Bnei Yisrael conquered Sichon and Og, and over there it says that further north there were some parties that went up north by themselves and conquered, and that was Machir ben Menashe and Yair, who were descendants of Yosef, who are alive at that time. One of them is a grandchild of Yosef, who's alive. So why doesn't Moshe, at the time that he's leaving Mitzrayim, go speak to his grandchildren? They most likely knew where it was. Why is he going to Serach Bat Asher? That's the Tosfot's question over here. Tema lo machir v'yair ben Menashe noldu b'mei Yaakov. They were alive from the time of Yaakov. Vayumi b'yei aretz. And they're part of those that enter land, because we know the stories there that they go up and conquer up north in Eivrei Yarden, and where it's called the Bashan, or the Golan today, that seems like they conquered up in that area. So why didn't Moshe ask them? They're more likely to know, because they're descendants of Yosef, and they were present. Yishlamar, the Soda Gdula Nimtzar L'Serach Bat Asher. So he quotes from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer that the Soda Gdula was given over to Serach. And so Moshe, when he came to the Zikne Israel to say that I'm the Redeemer, they went in and checked with Serach Bat Asher, that was he the real leader or not. And they said, yes, she said, yes, he is the leader, because he came with the secret words, which are, Pakod Yifkod Etchem. And she had that Mesorah back from the time of Yosef, that Pakod Yifkod, he comes with those magic words, then he is definitely the redeemer. And so she had the Mesorah about the Gula, so she was seen as the wise woman who had all this information. So then, why didn't he still ask the others? So here, Tosfot makes a veiled reference to it, but others play on it more, is that 30 years before the case, before they leave Mitzrayim, Bnei Ephraim think that the Gula is here, and they leave Mitzrayim wholesale before everyone else, and then they are killed. And that, the Midrash says, are the Atzmot Yveshot that are mentioned in Sefer Yechezkel. Those are the Atzmot Yveshot from those of Bnei Ephraim that left Mitzrayim early and were killed or died on the way when they left Mitzrayim before the Zman had come. So now, the Bnei Ephraim they were advised or told that the Gula was coming. So they didn't believe anyone anymore except Serach Bat Asher. And they might have especially not believed Ya'ir and Machir because they were from Bnei Menashe and the Bnei Ephraim had made a mistake already. So they knew that Bnei Yosef already had some trouble with this and were not so reliable. Therefore, they didn't want to go to them. They went to Serach Bat Asher. So others play on that issue of Bnei Ephraim more, saying that they were not as trustworthy anymore because of what had happened. And therefore, and then maybe even Ya'ir and Machir advised the Bnei Ephraim at that case. So therefore, they favored going to Serach Bat Asher to get the information. That's the way it's written in our Gemara. The Tosfot Shas brings an alternate girsa that B'Yigdash HaGadash Yagambo Moshe Gimel Yamim. That Moshe was wandering around for 3 days trying to find the coffin of Yosef. Ad Shebagabo Skula Serach Bat Asher. Until he happened to bump into Serach Bat Asher. So that would answer the question, why didn't he go to the others? He didn't go to anybody. He was walking around trying to find it, and he happened to bump into Serach Bat Asher while he was looking. And she says to him, what are you looking for? He says, Aron Osho Yosef. She goes, oh, why don't you ask me? I'll tell you where it is. And that's how the story develops. So in that case, it's less of a question because it was by happenstance that he bumped into Serach Bat Asher. He wasn't particularly going to her to get the advice. Where is he buried? She tells him that he's in the Nilus. Alach Moshe v'amad al sfat ha-Nilus. Moshe goes and stands by the edge of the Nile. Amalo Yosef Yosef. Higia eight, shenishba kodesh baruch hu. The time has come that Hashem had promised, which is Yosef tells the brothers, Pakodif koditrem, Hashem pakodif koditrem, elitim et atmotai mizeh. That Hashem is going to redeem you, and that's the lashon that Moshe comes to redeem the people with. And now Moshe is saying, elitim et atmotai mizeh, take Yosef's bones out. Shenishba kodesh baruch hu, sheni goletchem. Time has come when Hashem says, I'm going to redeem you. Higia shvua, shishbata et Yisrael. And the Shvua now that you made Israel promise that they'll take you out, it's time to come in and cash in on it. Im ata mareh atzmecha, mutaf. If you want to show yourself, fine, and we'll take you out. Im la varei anu menukim mishvuatcha. Otherwise, we are clean of the Shvua because we can't do anything. If we don't know where we are, if we can't get you, we can't take you out. You want to show yourself, we'll take you. If you don't show yourself, we're not. Miad, tzaf, aronos shel Yosef. The aron of Yosef floats to the surface of the Nile. Well, I don't be so surprised that metal floats, or that iron floats on the top here. Because we have another story, an alternate story. So there were Talmidim of Elisha who were working with an axe, and then the handle of the axe and the barzel, the metal of the axe, fell into the Yardain. Now, fala lamayim, they fall into the water. And then they speak to Elisha about it. Ha, Aduni, v'hu Sha'ol. They say, oh, yoy, it was borrowed. This was a borrowed axe, and now we need to return it. Meantime, it's at the bottom of the Yardin. We can't get it. So, v'yom ha'isha lukim, ana nafal. Where did it fall? V'yareyu et ha-makom. They show him the place. V'yiktzav eitz. He takes or cuts a piece of wood. V'yishlech shama. He throws the wood there. V'yatzef ha-bazel. And the metal floats to the surface. So you see that. Things can flow to the surface when Hashem wants it or when the Navi wants it. V'alo dvarim kavachomer. Ma'ili shat tamido shel Eliyahu. Elisha, who is a student of Eliyahu. V'Eliyahu tamido shel Moshe. And Eliyahu is a student of Moshe. Tzaf barzel mipanav. The metal floats for, the iron floats for Elisha. Mipnei Moshe Rabbeinu achat kam v'kama. Then certainly for Moshe Rabbeinu, the metal or the iron would float to the surface. Now, as Rashi points out over here, how could Eliyahu and Navi be a Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu? They live hundreds of years apart. What's it saying? So Rashi here says, Lav Dafka, that he was a Talmid of Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was part of the Mesorah, of the passing of the Mesorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was, as the Rambam notes, in the Shoshelet HaMesorah, that Eliyahu Navi is part of that Shoshelet HaMesorah. It's as if he got it from Moshe Rabbeinu directly. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is that if you look in the Navi, in the description of Eliyahu, description of Eliyahu parallels that of Moshe in a number of instances. First of all, that they were up on the Har Sinai, living there for 40 days. They're sitting in a Nikrat HaTzur when God passes by and they see the presence of the Shekhinah. There are a lot of dimyonot, a lot of comparisons or parallels between Moshe and Eliyahu. And that might be what the Gemara is referencing over here, that Eliyahu is a Talmud of Moshe, because the way the Navi describes him, Eliyahu was very similar to Moshe. Or, if you go with the other Midrash that says Eliyahu was Pinchas, then they take the Gemara literally, that Pinchas was a Talmud of Moshe, because he lived during the time of Moshe, and he was a Talmud of Moshe, and then Eliyahu would have been a Talmud of Moshe. You could take it literally. So for one of those reasons, he is definitely a student of Moshe. Based on that, then Moshe is greater than Eliyahu, is greater than Elisha. And if Elisha can float metal, then Moshe can definitely float metal to the surface. Now, it's interesting only because Moshe Rabbeinu does so many miracles. What's the Gemara's question? But he splits the Yam, he does all of these miracles, and all the Makot and Mitzrayim and Har Sinai, and yet here they're questioning whether he can float some metal to the surface. Seems like a strange question. But the answer might lie in the fact that the Rambam speaks in more Nevuchim about this and other places, that whenever Hashem does a miracle or an ace, he only does that, first of all, if he says it ahead of time. It's predicted, number one. And number two is, he only does it for the benefit of the Klal, or the Klal Yisrael as a whole. He doesn't do it for specific individuals. So over here, number one, you don't have any predictive nature of this ace. Number two is that this is being done personally, either for Moshe or Yosef, however you look at it. And then it's not a miracle that's being done for all of Klal Yisrael. So that's why the Gemara questions whether such a thing would happen, such a miracle would happen. The Gemara answers, yes, we see that by Elisha. That's also the example they bring as an example of a case where it was for personal benefit that he did a miracle, which is that Elisha brings to the surface the axe so that they can return it to the proper owner. There was done for their quote-unquote private benefit and not for Klal Yisrael as a whole. So we see from Elisha that things like that happen, that there are nisim like that. And therefore, that could be true by Moshe Rabbeinu as well. And that's the Ramban says on Parshat Shmot with regards to Yocheved, that if you check out the years of when Yocheved gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yocheved was older than Sarah when she gave birth to Moshe. How come the Torah doesn't make a big deal about that? By Sarah, it makes a whole big deal that the Mizkenim, Bayim, Bayamim, Loya, Orach HaNashim, LeSarah. Why is it? The Torah makes a huge thing about the fact that Sarah has a baby then. Yocheved was older as a baby, the Torah doesn't even say anything about it. So Ramban there says the difference is that by Sarah Imenu, it was predicted. Hashem sent the Malachim to Avram and Sarah to tell him that it's going to happen. And so, therefore, it's considered to be a huge miracle or it's something to write about because it was predicted. By Yocheved, there's no predictive nature to it, aside from what we saw yesterday by the Nevuah of Miriam. But that's all in the Drash side of it, it's not written explicitly. And since it wasn't explicitly foretold, then the Torah doesn't make a big deal out of the fact that there was such a nace. So again, here you could say something similar, which is that none of this was predicted ahead of time, so the Torah doesn't focus on these nisim. Right. So this is also not in concert necessarily with the Midrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu used the Shem Hashem to bring up the Atzmot Yosef, Alei Shur, which later was taken by Micha and thrown into the Egel HaZahav, or later on when he goes into Eretz Yisrael with Pesel Micha. So all of those derive from that Midrash or that chain of thought. But versus here, so it seems here that this is an alternate Midrash as to how they brought the Atzmot Yosef out, not using the Shem Hashem to bring them out. Or here's an alternate version of the story, which is Rabbi Natan Omer, B'kabarnit Shel Melachim Haya Kavur. Not sure the etymology of the word over here with like cabinet or a carbon. But here it says that they buried him in the royal burial catacombs, the sarcophagus, and therefore Halach Moshe v'amad al karbanit shel melachim. So Moshe goes there and says, there are all these people buried here. I have no clue where Yosef is. Amar Yosef higia eich nishba kosh baruch shuni gol etchem. Again, he gives the same speech that Hashem's taken time and take us out. V'higia shvua shishbat et Yisrael. We want to fulfill the shvua that Yosef had made Bnei Yisrael take his bones out. Make yourself known. Otherwise, we are exempted or exonerated from dealing with this shvuah. Botosha nizdaza arono shel Yosef. So all of a sudden, the aron starts to shake. So Moshe knew which one was that of Yosef. And he takes it out and he brings it with him. all those years that Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, ayu shnei aronot alalu, echad shomet, vechad shashinicha, mechavim zeim zeh. When Moshe, when they were traveling with the aronot, Moshe is traveling with the aron of Yosef, but he also has the aron of the luchot that has the shechina in it. So these two aronot are going side by side. Vayu ovrim v'shavim omrim, mativan shel shnei aronot alalu. What's the story here? Why are these two boxes floating along here, coming along with you? Amru echad shomet, vechad shashchina. One of them is the Niftar, and one of them is the Shekhinah. V'chimar darko shomet aleichim Shekhinah. Is that appropriate? Why would you ever put the mate next to the Shekhinah? Why is that okay? So Amru, kiyem zeh kol ma shekatuv bazeh. This one kept everything that's written in here, meaning that is if to evidence of the fact that Yosef kept everything that's written in the Torah. Rashi over here brings the Mechilta that shows how Yosef kept all the Aseret that he brought. And we know that he did Kibbur Abayim, we know that he did Lotinaf because of Eshet Potifar, and then with our examples that the Mechilta brings, including that the fact when his brothers come, it says that Toveach Tevach V'Achein, that they shechted the animals and they prepared it. Mar says, well, Achein means only preparation for Shabbos. Keeping Shabbat while he was in Mitzrayim. They go through, one by one, they go through Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelech Alukim Acherim Ha'Panai, and they say that how Yosef says at Elukim Ani Yarei, I fear God, and so on and so forth. They bring example after example how Yosef kept all the Aseret that he brought. So the fact that they were brought together was evidence or an indication that Yosef kept the whole Torah. Right, so that's what the Gemara learns from that, that you're allowed to bring a mate that's not a sur for coming into Har HaBayit because it was in Machaneh Leviyah with Moshe. And they prove from that on Har HaBayit, you're allowed to go up to Har HaBayit with Tumat HaMate, and it's not a problem. It's only with Machaneh Shekhinah that it's not allowed. So technically, when the Mishkan was in a position, they couldn't take Atzmaut Yosef in there. But here where they're traveling, maybe it's not considered to be Machaneh Shekhinah. Others bring up this Hasidish Kabbalistic idea that tzaddikim ain't mitamim. That when tzaddikim die, they're not mitameh, and based on that, they know they're matir kohanim to go into Marat HaMachpelah or to Kever Rachel, which is significantly problematic. But based on that, they also say here, Yosef could be with Machaneh Shekhinah because he's not mitameh. Right, so that would be the problem, because the Gemara learns from the Aron of Yosef evidence of the fact that where a tameh mate is allowed to go to. So if you really believe he was in the Machaneh Shekhinah, then that whole limud would have been extended into Machaneh Shekhinah as well, which makes it very problematic and why it's unlikely that that was what the Gemara is saying. I would even say here, I'm not even sure they traveled together. This is a conceptual idea that why are the Bnei Yisrael carrying an aron and Moshe is carrying an aron. And it's as if they're giving them the same honor when they're carrying the Shekhinah, when they're carrying their Atzmaut Yosef. And so the Gemara, people ask, Ma Pesha Davar, what is this? That they're carrying around a dead person, they're giving honor to, and they're carrying around the Shekhinah. Why are they giving the same honor? The answer to that question is, Ki Emzeh, Ma Shekatu Bazeh. And that there is a certain connection or reason for that. Alright, so now the Gemara says, V'ilo Asik Be Moshe Yisrael Avim Aske Be. And Moshe not taking care of Atzmaut Yosef, wouldn't a Bnei Yisrael taking care of it? V'aktiv it, Atzmaut Yosef Eshe'alu Bnei Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. In Yoshua, when it says that they bring the Atzmaut Yosef to rest in Shechem, it credits the Bnei Yisrael with taking him out of Mitzrayim. So they kavru b'Shechem, they bury that in Shechem. B'tu, ilu askebei Yisrael. But now, who am I askebei? Have Bnei Yisrael not done it? You don't think that the Shevet of Yosef, meaning Ephraim or Menashe, wouldn't have taken care of it? V'aktiv, v'yulu Bnei Yosef le'nachala. And then right in that pasuk in Yoshua, it says, well, they buried Yosef there, and that was where their nachala was, as if they took care of it. They buried him there, and they took care of it. Amru, hinichu lo kvodo bimrubim, yoter bimuatim. It's very similar to the case of Yosef, where the brothers are willing to abdicate or demure for Yosef to take care of it, because there's more kavod to Yaakov if the king takes care of it. So too, the shevet of Yosef, meaning Menashe and Ephraim, defer to Bnei Yisrael doing it as a whole, because it's more kavod to Yosef if all of Bnei Yisrael do it rather than just Bnei Shifto. V'tu amru, enichu lo kvodo bigdolim yoter miktanim. And then Bnei Yisrael themselves said, better that Moshe deals with it than we deal with it, because it's a kavod if the greater person deals with it than us. So they each deferred to the other because of the fact that it gave more kavod to the mate. So kavro v'shchem, Maishna b'Shechem. They buried him in Shechem. Why did they pick Shechem as the burial place for Yosef? Am Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chanina, Mishchem ganvuhu. L'shchem nakzir avedato, that he was stolen from Shechem, and so they brought him back to where he was lost, where he left. I mean, that's where the brothers take him and sell him down to Mitzrayim, is from Shechem. That's where they brought him back to. As Rashi notes right away, that's not true, because when he gets to Shechem, he asked the individual, where did my brothers go? And he said, I overheard them saying, that they went to Dotan. So he was sold out of Dotan, he wasn't sold out of Shechem. So the two possibilities here are, one, that Dotan is a suburb of Shechem, and though therefore it was really from Shechem was the major city there, and that's why they bury him in Shechem, because that's really where he was taken from. Or Rashi says, that brings the Midrash, and it's more emphasized in the Yerushalmi as well, that there's no place called Dotan. There's no such place. You look all through the Mikra, we don't find any place called Dotan. So what is that? Nelcha Daitaina? So Rashi over here quotes the Midrash, that Nelcha Nevakesh Datot Vidinim Heach Lamito Im Yavo Etzlenu. It was describing their plotting against Yosef, which is Dotan, is this acronym for the fact that they were Datot Vidinim. They were looking for ways and methods for getting rid of Yosef if he comes there. So it wasn't describing a place, but rather it was describing where they were headed, what they were thinking. And so he really was sold out of Shechem, and Dotan was just describing their state of mind or what they were thinking at that time. So that's how Rashi deals with it. Truthfully, the Alapshat, the easy way to deal with it is that Yaakov in Parshat Vayechi says to Yosef that Hinei noten lecha Shechem echad alechecha. I'm going to give you an extra portion, Shechem Echad Alechecha, to interpret extra portion, but also can be taken literally that he gave to Yosef Shechem, because Yaakov owns Shechem. He owns Shechem for two reasons. He owns Shechem because it says there, Vayikain et Chalkat HaSadeh, that he purchased a field. When they came to that area, he purchased a field outside of Shechem to settle down, as well as the fact that after Shimon and Levi kill out the city of Shechem, that they had conquered that area of Shechem. So that belonged to Yaakov, and Yaakov gifted that to Yosef. So he's buried in Shechem, because that was his special gift from Yaakov to Yosef. That's probably Alapshat, why he's buried in Shechem, because of that association of, that I'm going to give you, Shechem Echad, Alechecha. If you take that literally, that he got the place of Shechem, which Yaakov had owned, then that's why Yosef is buried there. All right, Kashu Kray Adodi. We have a stira in the psukim. K'tiv, Vayikach Moshe Tatzmot Yosef Imo, that Moshe carried the bones of Yosef. Uchtiv, and it says in Yoshua, what we just quote now, Betatzmot Yosef, Hashayalu B'nai Yisrael Mimitzrayim. That B'nai Yisrael are credited with taking it out of Mitzrayim. So how come in one Pasuk, Moshe is given the credit for taking the bones out of Mitzrayim, and the other Pasuk, B'nai Yisrael are given the credit for taking the bones out of Mitzrayim? What you're saying is true, is that Moshe didn't go into Eretz Yisrael, so he couldn't finish the job, so they finished the job. So it's true that Moshe carried them through the Midbar, and then they carried them to Eretz Yisrael. But the description in the Pasuk in Yoshua says that B'nai Yisrael took the Atzmot Yosef, Asher He'alu Mitzrayim, that they took out of Mitzrayim. They didn't take them out of Mitzrayim. Moshe took them out of Mitzrayim. That's why the Gemara here is questioned. Had it just said that they took Moshe Atzmot Yosef in and they buried them, I think they would have been fine. The problem with the Pasuk says, Asher He'alu Mitzrayim, that they took out of Mitzrayim, which is not true. That Moshe took them out of Mitzrayim. So Gemara says, Am Rabbi Chamer B'Kanina Kol Ased Devar Lo Gamro, but anybody who does something and doesn't finish it, Uba Acher B'Gamro, and someone else comes and completes it, Maleach Elav HaKetuv Al Shegamro Kila Sol. The Pasuk gives credit to the person who finishes it as if he did the whole thing. So it's almost a punishment to the one who started it and didn't see it through to its end, or a credit to the one who picks it up and finishes it off. Now obviously by Moshe's case, he can't be punished for it. It's not his fault. He's an onus over there. He's not going to Eretz Yisrael. He can't do anything about it. So it wasn't his fault. But still, it teaches you from this that when you are at fault, that you're not giving credit for the mitzvah, and the person who finishes it will be giving credit for the mitzvah, number one. Number two is, Rabbi Lazo Omer Af Morino To Migdulato. They lower him from his stature, Tichtiv. That at that point in time, Yehuda was lowered from his position of leadership amongst the brothers. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar, Af Kover Ishto Banav. He'll end up bearing his wife and his children, Tichtiv, Atamad Bat Shua Eshet Yehuda. That Yehuda loses his wife, his children, everything. Now, what does this have to do with the Atzmot Yosef? Absolutely nothing. But Yehuda, before that, had started with Hatzalat Yosef. Because when the brothers want to kill Yosef, what does Yehuda say? Ma betza kinerog etachinu. What benefit are we going to get out of killing our brother? Let's sell him to someone else. And that at least we'll get some benefit, we'll get some money out of it, and we won't have the blood of our brother on our hands. So Yehuda began the process of trying to save Yosef from the brothers, but he doesn't finish the process. He started with the mitzvah, but didn't finish it. The next parshia after that, right after they sell us, Vayered Yehuda Meitechav, the Chazal say there, what's the juxtaposition of the parshia? I'll tell you, why is it Vayered he went down? He was deposed as the leader of the Shvatim because they saw the reaction of Yaakov afterwards and how upset Yaakov was, and then they all blamed Yehuda for it. You're the leader, and you told us whatever you said, we did. So had you told us to keep him, we would have kept him, but you told us to sell him. And so you're the leader, and therefore Yehuda loses his face, loses his stature, and Vayered Yehuda, and all these bad things happen to him. So the way that I think the Maharal explains it over here is that a person who begins a mitzvah is someone who is rising to the level of Kedusha and taking themselves up to succeed and become holier and more spiritual. Then when they stop in the middle, it's as if they say, yeah, you know, I don't need that. So the Midah Keneged Midah is that this person who was rising in Kedusha, in Ruchaniyut, decides that he doesn't need it anymore. Hashem does Midah Keneged Midah, takes him down from his Gdula, that he lowers his stature. So that's the Midah Keneged Midah here, that a person who thinks that it's not worth his effort or his time to finish up the mitzvah and maintain that level of higher Kedusha and Ruchaniyut, Hashem will also take down his level, Bimoridoto Migdulato. But then, Amar Yehuda Marab, Mipnei Mani Kray Yosef Atzmot Bechayav. Why is Yosef called bones in his lifetime? Because when he tells the people in Mitzrayim to Bakol Yifkod Hashem Etchem, Elitem Et Atzmotai Mizeh, and you'll take my bones out of here. Yosef's alive speaking about himself and saying, you're going to take my bones out of here. So he's describing himself as bones when he's still alive. All right, the Pashtuna Pasuk is talking about, one, I'm dead, and I'm bones, you're going to take me out of here. But Chazal planned the fact that while he was alive, he was calling himself bones. Why is that? Because he did not object to the fact that his father's kavod was denigrated in front of him. To Kamrilei, because when the brothers are speaking to Yosef, they say, Avdecha Avinu. So they call their father the servant of Yosef. And that was a b'giah in the kavod of Yaakov vis-a-vis Yosef. V'lo mar lehu v'lo midein. He does not object in any way. How come Yosef died before the other brothers? Because it says there that Yosef passes away in Mitzrayim, and then it seems to me that all the other brothers pass away. Because he took a position of leadership. Leadership kills in the end. It shortens a person's lifespan when they take over positions of power or leadership. And therefore, Yosef dies early. There's also the famous Gro, who brings that, if you go to the beginning of Parshat Vayigash, when Yehuda is giving the speech to Yosef, over there it says five times Yehuda calls his father an Eved in front of Yosef. And when he's speaking to Yosef, he's speaking in Hebrew or Canaanite, and then they need a Meturgaman to translate for Yosef. So that means that Yosef, who understood the language because he was from there, heard twice. He heard the fact that his father was being called an Eved. So 10 times it mentions the fact that his father was called an Eved. And based on that, he lost 10 years of his life. Yosef dies at 110 years instead of 120, which would have been the lifespan that should have been assigned to Yosef. And based on that, he lost those 10 years for the 5 times 2 that he heard his father being called an Eved. That's an alternate midrash here to why Yosef's lifespan was shorter than the others, not because he was in a position of power, but because he heard his father being denigrated in this manner and did not object. Yosef hurad mitzrayma. Yosef is taken down to Mitzrayim. Am Rabbi Elazar al tikra hurad ela horid. Not that he was taken down, ela horid, that he took down. Now, the problem here might be for the fact that intervening in that story of Yosef being taken down to Mitzrayim is a story of Yehuda. So before the story of Yehuda, it says that Yosef's taken down to Mitzrayim. And after the story of Yehuda, it also says Yosef taken down to Mitzrayim. So it sounds like he was taken down to Mitzrayim twice. And that might be the cause for this drush over here. Why does it have to say Yosef hurad Mitzrayim twice? Now, it's like a typical story where if you take a story, you intervene with another story in the middle. When you go back to the old story, you pick up in the last couple of lines of the previous story, like the beginning of Sefer Shmot picks up the end of Sefer Bereishit to get you back into things and what's happening. So also over here, you could argue that, but here, it seems that they took that literally. Why does it say it twice? So you said it must have a different meaning about Hurad Mitzrayim, not Hurad Eder Horid. What does it mean that he brought him down? Shorid itztagnigei paro migdulatan. He took the astrologers of Paro down because of the fact that he's later on going to interpret the dreams of Paro, and he's going to become the central figure in interpreting the dreams and all those things that go on in Mitzrayim because of his connection with God rather than being an astrologer. So he's going to take them out. Vikneu Potifar Sris Paro. So he was purchased by Potifar, the Sris of Paro. Amrav Shkanola Atzmo, that he purchased him for himself, meaning to have Mishkav Zachar with him. Ba Gavriel Upiro. Gavriel comes and Paro over here means like to peel back, but basically he castrated him. Mikaraktiv Potifar, because in the beginning he's called Potifar. Ublasof Potifera. So this is all assuming that they're the same person, which isn't necessarily, true or doesn't have to be. But the Gemara here assumes that Potifar and Potifera are the same thing. So why does his name change from Potifar when he purchases Yosef to later on where he's called Potifera? Gemara says because Piro, he was castrated in the interim by Gabriel in order to protect Yosef from having Potifar sodomize him. So that's interesting because the Pasuk itself says he was Sris Paro. A Sris is a eunuch. So why isn't that enough of a reason to say that? You can see there was a girsa here, Ba Gavriel versus Sirso. Gavriel came and made him into a Saris. So, you can see Rashi takes that girsa out, and so does the Tosfot Shanz takes that girsa out and says it's Piro, because the word Saris Paro, which we find not only here, but in other places, is an indication that they were servants of the king, or they were serving in capacities towards the king. Saris Paro doesn't necessarily mean a eunuch, it means someone who's in service of the king. And therefore, the terminology here is not meant to mean Sris, that he was castrated at any point, but rather that he was an eved of the king, or he worked for the king. And so from that you can't learn out the fact that something happened, and that's why the drusha comes out of from Potifar, Potifera, that Piro. And that's what the focus of the drusha is over here. Okay, now the Gemara says, Vayomar Shem Eli Rav Lach. In the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, when Moshe is pleading with Hashem to let him into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem says to him, Rav Lach, it's enough, enough. Amar Levi, Rav Biser, Rav Bisru. He told them, or the news, Rav used the word Rav, Mida Keneged Nida, he was also told with the word Rav. Rav Biser, where did he tell them, or where did he speak to someone in this manner? With regards to Adat Korach. When the rebellion of Korach happens, he says, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, you guys have enough. What's going on here? Barab Bisru, therefore he was told, which is Rav Lach, that's enough. Stop arguing with me. Stop pressing me. Devar Acher, Rav Lach. What does it mean, Rav Lach? Rav Yeshlecha. You already have a master, Umanu Yoshua. Because, as Rashi points out here, we have a principle that two rulers can't rule at the same time. And since the star of Yoshua is rising now, Rav Lach, he's now the leader. If he's the leader, you're no longer the leader. If you're not the leader, you're not going to Eretz Yisrael, and that's what it means, Rav Lach, that you have a Rebbe now. You have someone who's going to be in charge now. Devar Acher, Rav Lach, Shalimru, Arav, Kama Kashe, V'tamid, Kama Sarvan. It's enough already, because don't say how stubborn or intransient HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that he doesn't let Moshe in, and how much Moshe is a Sarvan, that he is stubborn or persistent in his pleas to Hashem, that he doesn't give up. Hashem says it's enough. It's not going to change. And if you keep pushing and pushing, they're going to say that you are just a nudnik that just keeps trying. And they're going to say about me that I'm stubborn and I don't give in. So it's just going to make us both look bad if you keep it up. So Rav Lach, it's enough. You made your point. I gave you the answer and the answer is not going to change here. Kokach lama. Why is this the case? Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel, the Fum Gamla Shichana. According to the camel, you give the load, which is based on the drush of Chazal, that Hashem is middaktekim and tzadikim kechut asara. The greater the person is, the more Hashem holds them accountable even for the slightest infractions. So over here, when Moshe said doesn't seem so bad, he made a good point to Bnei Korach, Rav Lachem Bnei Levi. You guys are already special, you're already Leviim. What are you asking for the kahuna as well? And somebody said to them, Rav Lach, which either is a term that's used in the Torah generally when you say Rav, it's a negative term, and maybe that's why he's punished. Or Rav Lach Bnei Levi is that Moshe does not acknowledge at least what they were trying to accomplish. The rebellion of Korach is incorrect. It's totally misplaced. They're not right about their rebellion. Yet, you have to see that there is a spark of positiveness to this, which is that they want to grow. They want to be more kadosh. They want to be leaders of Klal Yisrael. there is some positive aspect to it. And the fact that Moshe says, Rav lechem ne'eli, you have enough. Why are you trying to get more? Was as if to push away that spiritual striving that they had, and therefore he's punished for it. Again, normal people would not be held accountable for this, but Moshe Rabbeinu on his level should at least acknowledge that side, and therefore he's punished. Ke'chutasara. And again here, Rosh Mulevitz in Sichut Musar says it here, and says it before about the Arba Mitot Beit Din, based on the interpretation that we saw there, that all of this midah keneged midah is always to enlighten the person as to why they're being punished or what their chait is. The association between the language that's used with you or the way that one is punished is an indication from Hashem about why you're being punished. And it's supposed to drive introspection and perspective on what's happening so that the person can then understand why they're being punished. And so the same thing over here. Barav Bisram, since he told them Barav, he was told Barav, in order to indicate them that he had made a mistake back by Bnei Korach, and that Hashem, that he should take it to heart, that he has to speak differently to the people, even though they're wrong, and even though he's right. And that is the famous story that's brought at the end of Yoma, with the guys, the Rav, with the butcher. The Rav and the butcher had an altercation, and the butcher spoke inappropriately to Rav. So it was an obligation of the butcher to go ask for forgiveness from Rav. But Rav over there goes and makes himself available to the butcher, walks in front of the butcher shop to give the butcher a chance to ask for forgiveness. Why did Rav do that? He said, maybe I spoke too harshly. Maybe I was not perfect with the butcher, and that's why he got upset. So Rav makes the effort to go over there to allow him to apologize. And there are also famous stories by Reb Chaim, again, where he got upset at a teenager who had argued about Reb Chaim had come to hear Kriyat HaTorah, I think on Rosh Chodesh. And he came to a very late minyan. It was like a 10:30 minyan that he was coming to hear these Kriyat HaTorah. And somebody made a comment to him, one of the young boys made a comment to him about the fact that, what are you at such a late minyan for? Reb Chaim got upset at him, and he chastised him for saying that. Because Reb Chaim was known, made that he didn't end up going to minyan because Libo Chashka B'Torah, and therefore he was learning, and he didn't necessarily end up at minyanim, but he believed against the Ramban in Masechet Megillah. And most of the Rishonim will believe that Kriyat HaTorah is a Chuvat HaTzibur. He believed there was Choshish, the fact that it was a Chuvat HaYachid. And therefore he made special efforts to always hear Kriyat HaTorah. Not necessarily being at Minyan, but to hear Kriyat HaTorah he did, because he thought it was a Chuvat HaYachid. So that's why he was at that Minyan. So he got upset at this boy. Later on, he went and apologized. Or he searched out this boy to apologize to him. Not because he was wrong. He was right in chastising. But maybe he was too harsh. Or maybe he spoke too harshly to this individual. Similar thing over here, that even though you were right or he was justified, even when you're right or you're justified, you have to look carefully at the way that you conduct yourself or the way that you make your point. Especially for the tzaddikim where Hashem is medakteki tam kechut asara, and that's why Moshe is held accountable for it over here. Right now, the Gemara says, V'yom alehem ben me'ah v'esrim shana nochi ha'yom. Moshe says, I'm 120 years old today. Shein tam lomar ha'yom. Why does he have to say today I'm 120 years old? Hayom malu yamai v'shnotai. That's because I'm exactly 120 years today. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tzaddikim live full lives from day to day, month to month, which means that Moshe passed away on the day that he was born. We saw in yesterday's Agarata that he was born on Zayin Adar, which would indicate here that he passed away on Zayin Adar. Dichtiv et mispar yamecha amalei. Hashem makes the promise that if you do what you're supposed to do, I will fill out your years. Filling out your years means that you will live a full life. Lo chal od latzev lavo. Moshe says, I can't go out and come in anymore. My latzev lavo. What does it mean he can't go in and out anymore? Ilei ma latzev lavo mamash. That physically he wasn't capable of leading the people anymore. Vachtiv. Doesn't the pasuk say at the end of Zot HaBracha, Moshe ben me'av eshrim shana b'moto, lo nas lechol, that it says there that he didn't lose any of his youthfulness, that he was still totally fit and full of vigor on the day of his death. So he clearly had the ability to go in and out. Uchtiv, v'yal Moshe marvot Moav el har Nebo. It says that Moshe went up from Arvot Moav, up har Nebo. V'tanya, we have a brayta, shtei mesrei malot ayusham. There were 12 stairs there, assumed that representing the 12 shvatim. P'san Moshe p'siachat. He's able to go up them in one stride. Went up all of the 12 stairs in one stride. So that shows you how strong, physically capable he was. And yet Moshe says, I can't go in and out anymore. What does that mean? So I'm Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, I'm Rabbi Yonatan, let's say, v'lavo b'divrei Torah. That he was no longer capable of teaching Torah anymore. that the gates of wisdom had been closed to him, that he was no longer able to be doresh. For those that say that, again, in some of the Kabbalistic or Hasidic thought, that at the time of the death, the tzaddik gets a hara, gets some tremendous understanding and light at the point of his death, that Moshe Rabbeinu should have even more chokhmah at the time of his death. The way that the Sheif Shmaitita explains it in his introduction to the Sheif Shmaitita, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, his chokhmah, his wisdom increased, and he had this experience of being wiser and all the light coming into him, but Nistamu Mayanot, which was that was closed out, his ability to teach that anymore. And what closed up here is not his wisdom or his understanding, but his ability to convey that to others. And that was shut down. But what's interesting here is that we read Parshat Vayelech always around the time of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. And it's supposed to be because that's a musar. That's something that brings it into what's the musar that's brought over there. So exactly this Gemara is the musar that's brought over there. Moshe Rabbeinu was healthy. Moshe Rabbeinu was 100% fit and full of vigor. And yet he says, I can't go in and come out anymore. I'm done. Why is Moshe done? Because Hashem said he's done. When Hashem says you're done, you're done. Doesn't matter how you're feeling, doesn't matter how healthy you are. Hashem says that's your time, you're done. And that's really the whole message of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. That if Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, you might feel like everything's going your way. Everything's fine and you're healthy and everything else that's good in your life. And why do I need? Why do I have to be so careful about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? The answer is, because Hashem says it's your time, it's your time. If you don't daven, and if you don't do tshuva, then Hashem will make a gzeirah. It doesn't matter how fit and healthy you are, you won't be here the next year. And so that's the Musar Haskel here, that even when a person who has everything going for them and everything seems totally fine, Hashem says it's over, it's over. And that's why we have to be so careful, and we have to plead with Hashem that we're able to live another year and have the rewards and the goodness that Hashem has bestowed upon us for another year. If Hashem says no, it's no, and it won't be there anymore, despite how you feel. Moshe and Yeshua go and stand in the Omoed. That was the Shabbat. Again, dio means duo, right? The double, zugi also means pairs, but it's a way that they described when two chachamim used to rule over the same Shabbat, meaning that they used to both give a drush on that Shabbat. That on the same Shabbat, Moshe Rabbeinu gave the drush in the morning, Yeshua gave the drush in the afternoon, to show that that was the passing of the baton. So that's why it means that they both stood there together in Ol Moed, was that they had a passing of the baton at that time period. It's also very important that the student takes over in the lifetime of the Rebbe, because that gives him the samchut, approval, and the clear inheritance of the Rebbe's position, because the Rebbe was there and he saw the student taking over. So that's very important, because if it happens afterwards, then there are always arguments. Was he really the one that was chosen? Is he really the one that was supposed to be? Here he makes it clear that that's the case, and we have that by David and Shlomo Melech, that David ensures that Shlomo is coronated in his lifetime because of the problems with the Daniel. And Avram also does that with Yitzchak at the end of this week's Parsha. That was the Torah for this week's Parsha, and Yitzchak does the same thing. He sends away the B'nai B'lechshim in his lifetime, gives them gifts, and then make sure that Yitzchak is the one who's going to carry the torch forward. Amar Yehuda, Imalei Mikra Ketuvi Afshar Omro. If it wasn't in the Psukim, we couldn't say this. Heichan Moshe Meit. Where did Moshe pass away? Bechelko Shel Ruvain. That was in the area of Ruvain's Yerusha. Dichtivi, Am Moshe Marvot Meravel Har Nevo. And Nevo, Bechelek Shel Ruvain Kaima. That was in the areas of Ruvain. How do we know that? Dichtiv, because it says in Bamidbar, when Bnei Ruvain go and build out the cities, it says, Bnei Ruvain Banu, that Nevo. One of the cities, one of the areas they build out is Nevo. So that's in the inheritance of Ruvain. Ve'echan Moshe Kavur. Where is Manishin buried? Bechokosh Shel God. In the possession of God. How do we know that? Tichtiv. Vayar Reshit Lo. So by the bracha of Moshe to God, it says that Vayar Reshit Lo. They saw that Moshe was buried there, and they wanted that possession. So he died in the area of Ruvain, and he's buried in the area of God. What's the distance between basically Har Nevo and where he's buried in the Chelek of God? Arba Milim. It's 4 miles, Roman miles. Dan Arba Milim, Miolicho. Who carried Moshe from the place that he passed away to his burial location? So it teaches you that Hashem carried Moshe Rabbeinu. As if he was in the wing of the Shekhinah, Hashem brought him to that location. And while that was happening, the Malachi Yashareth are saying, Tzidkat Hashem asah u'mishpatav im Yisrael. That he was, did the righteous ways of Hashem, and he gave over the mishpatim to Israel. But Kodesh Baruch Hu omer, and God says, mi yakum li imreim, mi yitzyat zevlim imployavin. Hashem is bemoaning the loss of Moshe Rabbeinu, because who's going to stand up against those evil people? And who's going to stand up to those who are involved in iniquity? And Moshe Rabbeinu stood up, first of all, for the kavod Hashem, but he also stood in the breach to protect the people when Hashem was angry in order to get them to do tshuva. So I just lost one of my greatest advocates. So what's going to happen? Shmuel Amar, mi kechacham umi yode pesha davar. Who is as wise as Moshe? Umi pesha davar, who knows how to deal with these situations. Who is the one who knows how to make a pshara, to negotiate between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem, be able to deal with these issues? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, chuchma ma'ayin timtza. Where is the chachma going to be found now? Because now we lost Moshe. Rabbeinu, wisdom is gone. Rabbeinu Nachman Amar, v'yamat sham Moshe. And he says that this is where Moshe died. Simalyan Amar, v'yamat sham Moshe safra rabu di Yisrael. They said that Moshe died there. The great scribe of Israel, and again, as I said before, sofer is not only the word scribe, but it means the Talmud Chacham, because the two were associated at that time. Just like Ezra is called Ezra sofer. It's not only because he's a scribe, but because he is considered to be a great leader, a Talmud Chacham, the one who brings the Torah Moshe. By the way, the word Samalyon over here, Tosva brings from the Rabbeinu Chanana, either Samalyon was a Chacham, or he was a Malach. Brings both interpretations. Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Agadol Omer, 12 mil al 12 mil keneged Machane Yisrael. It was 12 by 12 mil keneged Machane Yisrael. Bat kol mashmiya v'omer, v'yamat Moshe, safar rabbi Yisrael. So in that area, the voice came out, the heavenly voice came out and said that this is where Moshe, the great leader of Bnei Yisrael, is buried. Moshe. Some say Moshe never died. It says, im Hashem. So it says that Moshe was Sham im Hashem. And here it says, Vayamat Sham. So what does Sham mean over here? Just like by Har Sinai, it means that he was standing there being Mishamesh Hashem. Avkano made a mishamesh. What it means by Yamad Sham is not that he died, but he went back to service in Hashem. He just never came down. This time he stayed up there. So they buried him in the valley in Eretz Moav, opposite Beit Peor. Amra Brechia Siman Betoch Siman. It gives you a double indication as to where he's buried. It makes it very clear. They're giving you landmarks to tell you exactly where he's buried. Despite the fact nobody knows where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, Kfar Shalcha Melchut Risha Itzel Gistera Shobet Peor. We know that Melchut Risha, which refers to the Roman government, sent over to the leaders or the people who worked around Beit Peor. Hiranu Eichan Moshe Kavur. Find us the burial location of Moshe. Amdula Ma'alo, when they were standing up above in Arnevo Nidmei Lahem Lamato. Looks like its burial place was below. Lamata, when they're standing below, need melehem lamala. It looked like it was up above. So what are they doing? Echo kulushtei kitot. They split up into two groups. Otan shomdim lamala, need melehem lamata. Those who were standing up at the top looked like the burial place was on the bottom. And those lamata, need melehem lamala. And those that were staying at the bottom, it looked like he was buried on top. The kayem mishner amar, in order to fulfill the pasuk that says, lo yada ish et kvurato, that nobody knows where the burial place is of Moshe. Say over here that I think it's very important why the Torah emphasizes about certain locations and certain places where significant events happen or significant people are buried and yet we know nothing about them. For instance, Har Sinai. Har Sinai, which is the seminal event for Klal Yisrael and the Kabbalat Torah and experiencing the revelation of Hashem, yet we have no idea where Har Sinai is. And the same thing with Moshe. Moshe was the greatest leader of Klal Yisrael and have no clue where he's buried. And that is intentional. The Torah goes out of its way to, in these special locations, to almost obliterate their existence. And that is because the Torah wants and Hashem wants us to focus on the event and the person, but not on the location. If we knew where Har Sinai was, people would pay pilgrimages to Har Sinai because it's such a significant place. But the truth is, Har Sinai lost its kedusha after Hashem went. It was the event itself that was important, not the mountain itself that was important. And therefore, Har Sinai has no kedusha today. So we don't know where it is because they don't want us to know where it is because then people don't go and worship and people don't go and pay pilgrimages there. The same thing to Moshe Rabbeinu. If they knew where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, people would end up going either worshiping Moshe, davening at Moshe, going to his kever, And if you need every evidence of that, that's what happens today. You have Kivrei Tzadikim, and instead of coming Aliyah the Regal and coming to Eretz Yisrael, where people are supposed to be davening, be with the Shekhinah, they go to Chutz La'aretz to go to daven by people's kvarim and set up shop over there. So if that's any evidence of what happened, Hashem makes it clear that nobody's going to know where Moshe is buried. So there's going to be no worshiping of Moshe. There's going to be no pilgrimages to Moshe, because Moshe as a figure, as a leader, is more important in our minds and what we understand about him rather than the physical location where he's buried, which would then diminish from that fact and make him into an idol of sorts or a worshiping of sorts. And it goes back to what we saw earlier in the Gemara when the Mitzrim want to bury Yosef. They put him into Aaron and they throw him into the Nilus, because that's what they did when they had somebody that there was a special leader. They used to, again, like sacrifice and put them into where their gods were. And the Midrash even notes that, some note that they did it intentionally. They knew that Moshe had made B'nai Israel promise that it would take him out of Mitzrayim. Do you know how they prevented them from leaving Mitzrayim? They threw the Aaron into the water so nobody could find it. Because then they knew, they're not leaving Mitzrayim without Yosef. They can't find Yosef. They're not leaving. So that's why he had all that miraculous things happen to get the Aaron Shel Yosef and to bring him up to Eretz Yisrael to have him buried. But all those years that Yosef's there, he's buried and nobody knows where he is. Buried, again, to avoid the problem of people worshipping the Aaron of Yosef, both the Mitzrayim and B'nai Yisrael. And so there is this idea that whenever we have a special place or event that, aside from the Mikdash, of course, where the Shekhinah is present, that we don't have information that gives us the exact location, we're unable to find the location, because we don't want people to worship and to know about these locations and take away from the event or the person by making them into some sort of physical item or our idol in any way or form. Okay, we're going to stop here on six lines down on the top of Yud Daled Amud Aleph.